Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
So, how is day 874 of the apocalypse going for you?
You know, I saw a really good joke about this, and it was like, for anybody losing track of the days, today is Thursday of November, and I was like, yep, that's about how I feel. I keep losing track of what day it is, and, like, I don't know. There's remote teaching sucks, and I hate it. And, like, I'm going to really love being back in the classroom with my kids, like, even on bad days or, like, even when a kid has a temper tantrum or something. I'm going to be so much happier to be back there. But I'm keeping sane. And it's nice to be with my kids and to, like, not have to stress about their day. And, like, that's the really nice thing is that I get to be with my family during all this, even when it means I can't work. How are you doing, bud?
Oh, you know. So let me just give a little short story about like the joys of being a small business owner.
Yes, give them to me.
Okay, so Idaho, the governor, you know, gave out his decree saying that non-essential businesses should close. And so yes. I did that. And we did our order way earlier than I expected Idaho to, because we're Idaho, but they did. But also because we're Idaho, it's like the order's really not very well defined what you can and can't do. And
yeah, we played that game in Texas too.
Yeah, yeah. And like when he did his press conference, he was like, some reporters asked him, you know, what's the enforcement going to be and how's this going to work? And he's like, well, you know, we don't want to be arresting anyone. And basically said that like the enforcement is going to be the honor system. And so, you know, a lot of people are just kind of doing whatever they want. And, you know, I'm trying to be a responsible member of society and I closed my business and I laid off my employees, told them to file for uninsurance, and like I've been paying uninsurance tax for years and years and years and years and years, and this is the first time I've ever had an employee file for insurance, and now it's all of them, and now you know Brian and I are doing the shipping ourselves for the site. And you know, technically I don't know if that might violate the order, but we're like, it's not like we're gonna risk infecting anyone, so we're gonna do what we can.
Yeah.
So then the federal government passes their bill and it says if part of it is I can apply for this small business association loan. Mm-hmm. And the loan is intended to pay like payroll, rent, and utilities. And if I use like 75% of this towards payroll, and if I don't lay anyone off, then I don't have to pay back the loan.
Okay.
So, you know, I asked the bank, like, so I can rehire my people and, you know, use this to pay them. And then I don't have to pay it back, right? And like, yeah, we think that's how it works, but things are kind of chaotic right now. And so, you know, today, Friday, was the day that you could do the application. And I got my application in. You know, we'll see what is going to happen. But, you know, I'm starting to make plans with my manager on, you know, what is this going to look like if I rehire everyone, but they can't really come into work? And what does that look like? And what do they do? Or are there, because Idaho's Idaho, and like I've asked, I have some friends who are like associated with the government here, asked them what we could or couldn't do, and they're like, you know, it's kind of whatever, man. And they're like, I do know that the city and the county aren't going to do any enforcement on anything. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so, you know, now I'm starting to look at things like, well, you know, how would it work if my manager came into the shop by himself, and then he's not going to get any contamination from me and Brian? You know, we do, let's say Brian and I do shipping in the morning, and then in the evening, my manager does like curbside drop off for people, or, you know, whatever. And
yeah.
And is that even,
is that allowed?
Is that even allowed? You know,
and what will happen? What could go wrong?
Like, obviously Idaho isn't going to care if I do that because Idaho, but, you know, is that, am I giving enough concern to my employee/members of society doing that? And like, it seems like, given how, you know, we're doing food takeout, et cetera, it seems like it's probably okay, but
yeah.
Those are the sorts of things and sorts of questions that I've been trying to deal with. Mm-hmm. So
now, here, I have a question. Yeah. I was listening to one of the Chain Attacks, and they were joking about how like one of your competitors won't close.
I've kind of terrified to check on that. Like, I would not be surprised if they're still like running Friday Night Magic or some craziness. I mean, who knows? I'm assuming they're probably not doing Friday Night Magic, but I wouldn't be shocked if they were open to retail. So I don't know, but I mean, and it's tough. Like, I know one of my competitors, like, they don't do anything online, and if they just close down their retail, what are they supposed to do to survive? You know?
Yeah, no, it's I one of our local shops, in fact the one that I've been playing a lot of MCP at recently, they basically started an online store for locals to use, and they've been doing a lot of like, call us and we'll video chat with you to show you what's on the shelves, and
right,
like,
yeah, yeah,
they've been, you know, and it's like, yeah, like I guess it was it's kind of cool that it gave them that time and that push to like do an online inventory, and I don't know. It's the whole thing's crazy to me. And you know, I've worked in game stores for enough time in college that just, I know that a lot of them run on relatively thin margins, and it can be really, like, really scary for these places, and for you. And like, it's anything that disrupts like this stuff, like, and you know, game stores started hurting before they had to close. I don't know, man.
And on the bright side, I'm not in the restaurant business.
Yes.
I think we both have friends who have had to deal with the fallout with that, and it's not fun.
Yeah, I think Chili put it pretty well, that he said it's like a restaurant apocalypse. And we're going to lose so much of the, like, you know, restaurant vitality that a lot of cities have been building recently with, like, you know, awesome restaurants that do different things.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, let's talk about something positive.
One of the things that's kind of funny about it, or crazy about it, I don't know, is that there's going to be some ways, I think, that if you were a business who was thinking about starting a business, then you're potentially going to be in like a better position than someone who has been like an established business and has been like put on hold and has like all these debts that they now have to figure out what they're going to deal with.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know, it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah,
But let's talk about games and
I really
wish that I could be playing Crisis Protocol right now.
Yeah, me too.
And I've had a few friends invite me to do Tabletop Simulator with them. Mm-hmm. But I've been a little bit leery to do that just because, like, it doesn't really feel like it'll be the same, and also I've heard that it takes a little bit longer.
Yeah, it, whenever you're doing something like that, I don't know, I like in-person gaming.
Right.
Yeah. I like painting my own guys and then having them on the table, and I would just rather play, like, Doom or Animal Crossing for the, like, 800th hour if I was gonna do that.
Right.
But I'm getting a lot of painting in, and if you look on social media, you know, like, everybody's posting paint jobs, and there's even people that are like, oh, I guess I'll have to paint my terrain because I painted all my models, and I feel like that's pretty special, actually, that, like, we're going to come out of this and a ton of people are going to have fully painted, you know, rosters and terrain, and it's going to be, I think for, like, mini gaming, it's going to be really cool because we'll come out of it with like a lot more energy once we're allowed to play together again.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to talk about Thor, though.
Okay. Well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you want to read his card to us?
Yes, I do. So the first thing I'm going to mention is that he is a 5-pointer. So currently the only 5-point model we have to compare him to is MODOK, which is a really interesting place. So he has 6 stamina on his healthy side. When he's injured, he has 8 stamina. So he's got a total of 14 stamina. So pretty good. And he does have the same amount of stamina as MODOK, just spread out more evenly. He's a medium move. He's a size 2. He is threat 5, like I said. For his defensive, he's 4 physical and 4 energy defense. And then he's 3 mystic defense. He has 3 different attacks. He has a strike that's a pretty good version of strike. It's range 2, it's 6 strength, so pretty good. And then after it's resolved, he gains power equal to damage dealt, just like every other character with strike, except Hulk, I guess. He has a wild effect that's wild throw. So this is why his strike is so special. And it's before damage is dealt, the target character, if the target character is size 4 or less, you can throw him short. So he can hit Hulk and throw Hulk, which is fantastic. I love it. There is nothing in the game he can't throw with that attack yet. He's got a hammer throw, which is range 5. It is 5 strength, so not as good as strike. It does cost 1 power. And then after this attack is resolved, the target character gains the shock special condition. And Jay, can you remind me what shock does?
No, but I can look it up. Do you know it, or were you actually asking me?
No, I was trying to, like, engage you more and keep the listeners, you know, like, guessing who was going to talk next. Please double check for me. I'm going to say it, but while I keep going, could you check the rule book? Shock is that they roll 1 less attack dice. I am pretty sure. It's been 4 weeks since I've gotten to play because of spring break and the shutdown, but so it's an ability that, like, lowers the amount of dice that your opponents get.
Yeah.
He has an energy attack that's God of Thunder. It's area 2. So to remind you, area 2 is you just measure every character that's within range 2 of him. And it's dice 7, and it's 6 cost. So it's a huge cost attack. 7 dice, and it's everyone within 2. So in certain scenarios, he's going to be able to catch 3 characters with 7 dice each. So pretty cool.
I can verify that shock is remove 1 die from the attack roll.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I'm always worried about status effects because, like, I think those are the things I get confused the most and I need the rulebook for. I'm going to skip his leadership ability because I do want to talk about that last. So he has an action superpower called For Asgard. It is basically charge, except at the end of his advance, he can only make a strike attack. But then it adds an additional ability where if it dealt at least 1 damage, it staggers the opponent. So, you know, normally charge costs 2, and you can make any of your attacks as long as you pay for them. Well, like for Asgard is, it costs 3. He can only make his strike attack, which is still damn good and has the chance of throwing. And then it also staggers. So like if you for Asgard up to a really expensive character, you got the chance of throwing them into someone else, dealing 6 dice and staggering them. It's I think for Asgard is amazing. Costs 3, so a little bit pricey, but it's well worth it. He has Strongest Avenger, which is, and we talked about this with Vision, it's one of the best throws in the game. It's up there with Hulk's throw. Hulk's throw costs 2 and his costs 3, but he can throw any terrain or enemy character as long as it's size 4 or less and within range 2, and he can throw it medium. So this is a fantastic throw. Only downside is it costs 3 instead of 2 like a lot of other throws, but it's just great. He has the superpower Asgardian, which right now all of the other Asgardians also share with him, and that during the power phase he gains an additional 1 power, so he will always be gaining 2 power during the power phase, which is really fantastic. It makes sure that in the early game you can start off and, you know, you can just generate power so much easier. You can do things like make a hammer throw and also pick up an item with Thor, and not have to worry about like split. It makes it so much easier to choose what to do in the beginning. And for, you know, for those higher attacks, like it helps make sure you can use your superpowers and make the bigger attacks in the middle of the game. And he also has flight, which is really important. So, and like I said earlier, he has 6 stamina on the front, and when he gets injured, he has 8 stamina, which is really good with his like solid defensive abilities. I wanted to talk about his leadership last because I really do think that this leadership is a really big one. So he has Prince of Asgard, Affiliation Asgard. It says at the start of each of your turns, one allied character may spend 1 power. If they do, remove 1 damage or 1 special condition from that character, and then each allied character may use this superpower once per round. So whenever you start a turn, it doesn't matter what character you're activating, any of your characters can spend a power to remove a special condition or a damage, and they can only do that once per round. So let's say Loki is staggered, but you really want to make 2 actions. Loki can do it even if he's not activating right away. And like, this is just, I think it's a really cool ability. Even healing 1 for 1 is fine on the worst of turns, but I think we're seeing a lot of situations where like special conditions are getting stronger and more varied. So like Groot passing out Root really easily. There's still a lot of stun and stagger and bleed in the game. But it's a really useful one.
I mean, one of the common things you see is Venom kind of moving around his attacks that automatically cause bleed, etc. Mm-hmm. And so I would agree with you that that's the case. And then there's also, I think, another thing that can maybe have some special consideration is the scenarios that end up damaging you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Being able to heal on those so that your characters aren't slowly going down in power can make a pretty big difference. Down in health, I should say.
Yeah, I was playing someone and we were playing Gamma Shelters and Wakandan Herb. Mm-hmm. And I had I played with an Asgardian team with Hulk to try out using the Hulk as an herb carrier.
Okay.
And pretty much every one of my characters just healed every turn, and we were out of the shelters. Like whenever we were out of the shelters, it was just there's no
right.
punishment.
It's like, oh, okay, yeah.
It's like fine. I spend a power and I'm fine, and you know I gained that power anyways. Or it's Hulk. He doesn't care about healing. But I can shake, you know, stagger or stun or so. I think it's a really good affiliation. Currently, there's only 4 characters that work in it, and they're the 4 released Asgardians. Thor, Prince of Asgard, and then we have Loki, and then we have Hela, and then we have Valkyrie. Angela is listed on the faction card, so we know that eventually we'll get Angela, who I don't know if you know this, Jay, but Angela is a Spawn character, and there's a really fun story about why she's now a Marvel character.
Okay. Yeah, no, I had no idea.
Yeah. She was a character created for the Spawn comic book series in Image Comics.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know if you know. I'm going to go into this really quickly because I love talking about it. But so Image Comics was created by mostly Marvel employees to do creator-owned properties and give more rights to, like, the creators. They did really well, and they had this, like, they had these rules basically that were like, anybody who creates something owns it, and they have, like, micro studios. So Neil Gaiman, the very famous writer, wrote an issue of Spawn where he created the character Angela. And based on, like, the way the contract was, he assumed he should get ownership of the character and that he would get, like, you know, if Todd McFarlane wanted to use the character, he'd get a little cut every once in a while. Todd McFarlane spent almost 10 years using Angela and, like, not giving any money or credit to Neil Gaiman. So it was, like, this really brutal, like, back-and-forth lawsuit for a while. And when Neil Gaiman won and got ownership of the character, he immediately, like, sold it to Marvel Comics. And so Marvel wrote Angela in as Thor's, like, missing sister. And I love it. And she's also in Guardians of the Galaxy faction because she first appeared in a Guardians of the Galaxy comic and, like, joined them as a space angel. Anyways, I'm really excited for the Asgardian affiliation. I think that's one of the cooler things that Thor brings is this really cool leadership ability. He's the most expensive leader, but he's really beefy and tanky, and he brings his own, like, ability to let everyone heal. And so you can make some really ridiculous teams where it's like Thor and Hulk and then whoever else you want, and you just try to play to win with Thor and Hulk beating everybody.
Yeah. With that combo, people are even more excited about Hulk of late, given the recent ruling that you can play the card to I can't remember the name of it, but you heal a point if on a
field
day's character.
Dressing.
Yeah, field dressing.
Yeah, so. A lot of people thought that Hulk just immediately is removed from the table, but he does stay on the table dazed until the end of the round.
Right.
So yeah, you can. That's a good thing for us to talk about. You can field dressing Hulk, everybody. So field dressing says that, I'm pulling it real quick. Field dressing says a character within two of a dazed allied character can spend four power to play it, and you remove dazed, and you heal, and you remove one damage from the character. So this was a good card, but apparently people just didn't realize you can use it on the Hulk. And it's funny, right? This card's been out for 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah,
And it's just all of a sudden people were like, wait, can you field dressing Hulk? And it's like, yeah, there's nothing against you doing that. So it's this really cool realization a bunch of people had. And you can field dressing Thor, which is jumping ahead, but it's really good.
Why is that jumping ahead?
Well, because we'll talk about team tactics cards later. That's
okay. Okay. Fair enough. Well, we have. Are there any, what additional things would you like to go over with Thor in game before we jump into our comic book club? Anything?
I will say also, just to throw this out, Thor's an Avenger, and he really likes being an Avenger still, just because it means he can save one power for his superpowers, because he always is using four Asgard or Strongest Avenger every turn.
Yeah.
So, like, he's a really good Avenger as well. And I've seen some people playing him with Cabal, because he can easily, you know, hammer throw twice a turn for free, basically.
Right.
But I think, I don't know. I've mostly played him in Asgardians, and I've been playing him more in Avengers and really liking him. I think he's more reliable than Hulk a lot of times, but it's something I've been thinking about.
That's kind of hard to believe that another character would be better than Hulk.
Well, I mean, the nice thing about Thor is that he can be injured and lose status effects.
Yeah.
He's got 6 less power. He does less damage, but I don't. This game is not really about doing damage, like, right, 100% of the time.
It is real quick, I guess, before we switch over. Let's do a discussion about the 2 5-point characters in the game so far. So,
yeah,
obviously, they're very different characters. But basically, the only thing that I was curious what you thought was, which one do you think is more survivable?
So I think Thor is definitely more survivable. Especially because of field dressing makes it more likely that he'll last an extra round. Whereas MODOK is, I think MODOK is a higher priority. But because Thor is, like, up in the business, there's more likely to be a character who can get to him with 4 power and remove days from Thor. I think having 4 physical defense and 4 energy defense is better than 2 and 3, even with the psionic force field MODOK has at the beginning. And then, like,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough for me to say because some of the things that MODOK has going for him, usually he can be a little bit farther back.
Mm-hmm.
And physical distance is a can be a great protection. The wilds not counting is obviously a big deal, and then him being able to spend to do rerolls can be a big help.
Yeah, I think the wilds not counting to me only adds like a 1/8 of a chance that he's protected from a damage, and I would rather take those 2 extra physical and 1 extra energy. What I like about MODOK is he's immune to a lot of status effects because of psionic force field.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way that I tend to look at it more is he's going to take 25, basically there's 4 hit dice and 1 in 4 of those is gone for him, so he's taking 25% less damage on average than the other characters. But it... I do think it's an interesting question. I don't know that I necessarily have a strong opinion one way or the other. I can see some pretty good arguments either way. I guess I don't feel like it's necessarily an open and shut case for either one. Yeah.
And the other thing is Thor is way more mobile. He's got flight. Right. He's medium move, and he's a size 2, so he can get out of line of sight sometimes.
Right.
So I think there's an argument to be made that MODOK is better at resisting damage. That's definitely something I want to ask Jacob about, because if you read his articles, like he's really good at going into the probability, what the math says. If you don't know, it's the Xavier Protocols blog. He really goes into like the math and the probabilities a lot, and it's been really fun to read some of his.
Yeah, all right.
He's also in our Discord, so we have lots of great talks with him.
Yeah, let's go ahead and transition over and let's talk about our comic book club.
Yay!
So let's start with our short character origin / background.
Okay, so Thor is the son of Odin and Gaia, goddess of the earth, like the mother earth basically. Odin specifically made an alliance with her to have a kid so that his child would have like a strong bond with Midgard. So Thor has been raised I believe that was kind of like a surprise in the 70s or 80s, but Thor was raised to believe that, oh dear, I forget who his mother is in the like Marvel comics, but I'll look that up in a second. But so Thor is basically the brash and like, you know, warlike god of thunder. In Marvel comics, he basically, when Odin realized that Thor was maybe not like balanced enough, what he did was he bonded Thor to a human soul so that Thor would learn humanity and humility. And he kind of kicked Thor out of Asgard. And that's how we have the superhero Thor, who is traveling and adventuring. And so Donald Blake is his like human alter ego. And Donald Blake is a doctor who has a limp and he carries a walking staff with him. And so in the classic Marvel comics, Donald Blake would slam his walking stick down on the ground and be transformed into Thor. And then Thor would transform back into Donald Blake when his adventures were done. So they kind of found a way to give Thor like a superhero alter ego. Thor is like, you know, he's in a lot of his teams, he's presented as the most powerful character in the Avengers. And he's still kind of presented as like, he doesn't really fit in. He's a fish out of water character in a lot of stories.
So that was actually one of the things that I wasn't super clear starting off on the arc, because I wasn't aware of like the alter ego stuff. And so I'd be like, at first I thought they were actually two different people.
Oh, okay.
And then it started to appear that was not the case.
Yeah. So Donald Blake has been mostly abandoned by modern writers. In fact, this comic was them bringing Donald Blake back into the like continuity of comics. If you read a Thor comic now, Donald Blake is not at all involved. They separated again, so it's pretty weird.
Huh. Well, there you have it. So let's go ahead and give an overview on this arc then.
Yeah. So real quick, we all know Ragnarok.
Do we?
The idea that Asgard and the Asgardians get destroyed at the end of the world, and then kind of it starts something new. This takes place after Ragnarok, and basically several, like, at this point, when we begin this story, which is Thor from 2007, written by Michael Straczynski, Thor has not been around for like 3 years. Him and the rest of Asgard fell trying to stop Ragnarok, and Thor and the rest of them kind of realized they're going to lose, and this is all going to be restarted. Like, they're going to keep being in this cycle of death and rebirth, and Ragnarok is just going to keep happening, and it'll just be a cycle of suffering and awfulness. So what they decide to do is quit and stop existing and just accept that things are over, and then they won't have to like drag all the other realms into their bullshit for the rest of time. And so they do. This story kind of shows Donald Blake wakes up Thor, because Donald Blake was existing in this like realm of nothingness. Donald Blake brings Thor back because Thor is a hero and he needs to be a hero. That's his identity. And basically Thor recreates the physical Asgard in Oklahoma. And then he starts seeking out and finding the other Norse gods. So the other Norse gods, their like souls fell to Midgard, and they kind of bonded with other humans, just like Thor did with Donald Blake. And Thor is going and finding and separating them. And it's kind of revealed that Thor is being really picky about who he looks for and finds. And he's avoiding certain gods that he doesn't want to wake up. And, in the very next story, he's tricked. An enemy has been kidnapping the humans with the Norse gods in them. And when Thor is fighting, he basically releases all of the gods from the humans. And it turns out all the gods were his enemies. So that would be Hela. That would be Loki. That would be the Enchantress. All of the gods that are bad guys in Marvel Comics are now free, and it left behind Loki. And so we get to see that Loki is telling Thor, "Oh, I want to redeem myself because I'm free of my bonds of destiny." And Loki is now a woman, which is not clearly explained here. It's kind of later addressed in that Loki is gender fluid and changes, like Loki adapts to be whatever Loki needs to be. So in this case, it's not clear yet, Jay, but I will tell you, this version of Loki is not only a woman, this Loki also doesn't lie. This Loki only tells the truth.
Hmm.
And so this version of Loki is like a new angle of Loki where She is basically here to fuck shit up and be the god of trickery, but she'll only tell the truth to do it. And I really like how it builds up from here, where you can see she's, you know, she's still being sneaky, but she's acting contrite and like she wants to be a good god for Thor and serve and all that good business. So Thor basically from here, he's realized, okay, well, I accidentally freed all the bad gods. So what Thor does is, after kind of settling Asgard and getting everybody situated, Thor flies up into the atmosphere and he does his magic whatever, and he sends lightning all across the world that wakes up all the gods at the same time. And the last we see in issue 6 is Thor is, he's passed out. He's lost, he's used up too much energy and he's really weakened now. And so he's falling back to Earth. So this is kind of a story of Thor bringing back all the Norse gods after they've all died.
And part of, was I correct in reading that, like, kind of the main god that he was going up to awaken was Odin in particular? Was that correct?
No. And that's explained later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's, little spoiler, we're gonna be continuing this story arc. And I don't think it's a big spoiler. Odin died before Ragnarok happened. So he was not a part of the gods who, like, their souls fell to Earth.
Mm.
So the main god Thor was looking for is Sif, who is classically like Thor's romantic interest. And she's like one of the greatest warriors. She's in Thor 1 and 2. She's the who's the actress who plays her? But Lady Sif is the character that she's looking for. He's looking for Jamie Alexander. Okay, I wouldn't have known that name. But he was looking for Lady Sif. He was looking for all the like bigger heroes. Something I really like about this is that it's a pretty decent standalone story that sets up like a really new status quo, because like it puts Asgard in Oklahoma and it has all the gods like interacting with these like small town like Oklahomans. I really like that.
So
you have questions?
I guess, sure. I guess this is more of a conversation thing. Like I remember we did on some of the early Marvel stuff we did, that it seemed like they kind of took a lot of different characters from a lot of different things. So, you know, Hercules was a superhero, and then you had Thor, and you had like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or like just a bunch of things from either literature or mythology or whatever. And it's, would you say that Thor and the Norse mythology has been kind of the most widely accepted in modern time now of these characters, or popular maybe might be a better way to say that?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I keep seeing that like happening, and it's weird. The Marvel version of the Norse gods seems to be way more prolific than anything else, right? And that's weird because we live in a world where there are actual people who still worship like the Norse god as their main, the Norse gods as their like religion. And there's still, you know, like big authors who write about the Norse gods and retell the ancient, the very old stories. I want to say ancient, but I don't know why that word bothers me here. But like, you know, the stories of the Norse gods are over 1,000 years old.
And maybe this is just my own ignorance to comics or whatever, but like when I was a kid, I was more used to like the X-Men that were mutants, or you know, people who got exposed to radiation or bitten by a spider or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then like it just seems kind of weird to have these heroes that are from either like literature or mythology.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a classic superhero thing though, like that we have classical gods and heroes mixed in.
Is it more of a Marvel thing? Because I don't know as much with DC, but have they done
kind of that DC thing? Has done the same thing too. DC usually puts in like the gods as villains, if anything. But like, for example, Marvel and DC both have like Merlin as key characters to certain story arcs. Like Merlin was a Sorcerer Supreme in Marvel before Doctor Strange.
Right.
And then like in DC Comics, like Merlin was basically almost like a superhero or a supervillain based on the story they tell. Like they'll bring in stuff like that. And like in Marvel, Ares is like an anti-hero. Like he's like a Punisher version of Hercules. And in DC Comics, Ares is like he's a villain who, you know, always fights Wonder Woman. But like even Wonder Woman is their version of like, well, we wanted to create our own godlike character.
Right.
And so she ties into Greek mythology a lot.
Right.
And I think some versions of Wonder Woman are like she is created by the gods. But it's pretty common for both Marvel and DC to do that. And I think it's because it's okay. I can go deep into this, but like the Greek and like Roman gods, like those were basically like Hercules was basically a superhero before that was an idea, right?
Sure,
like
yeah,
he went on all these adventures and like he was just a normal guy like you and me, you know, except for the murdering his family stuff, but you know, like that idea and like. You know, even like Hercules had like different origin stories and like Hercules's timeline was different based on the region and the like teller and the history. And so, you know, they're like the stories of mythology, I think, are really similar to superhero stories and like how they're presented and given to the listener and the reader. So I don't think it's that surprising.
Okay.
Is it weird to you?
So I don't think, for example, that Merlin is weird. I do think that, and maybe some of this was just this was an old comic and the artwork wasn't as good or whatever, but like Mr. Hyde was kind of weird, I thought. Mm-hmm. And then with the mythology stuff, there is your point with Hercules makes a little bit of sense because he's like more of a demigod than an actual god, and I guess also with like the Greek gods, they when you compare Greek mythology to Judeo-Christianity, you know, they had a lot more human characteristics and foibles and stuff like that than what you see in Judeo-Christianity. But it is kind of weird that like seeing someone who's a god battling superheroes or with or against.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it does create this kind of strange balance, right? Of like, how is that even fair?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So last question. These are the hard hitting questions that are on my mind, Greg, but obviously Thor's costume slash outfit is one that is, you know, he's had for quite a while. Do you like his costume or the way that he looks
in this comic versus in others?
Just in this one or in general. Yeah,
I think this one's fine. I think the movie costume is really based off of how he looks in this comic.
Mm-hmm.
There are others I really like more. I like the more, like, the rougher it looks and the more, like, non-superhero-y, the more I like it. Why are you specifically focusing on this?
No, I was just curious.
Okay.
On some of the costumes that he has, there's the circles that he has on his chest can be, like, particularly pronounced. And I tend to not like those costumes as much as some of the others.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's what is it called? You've seen Spider-Man Homecoming, right?
Yeah.
So in that, they make a reference to Thor's, like, girdle.
Okay.
Being one of the, like, items that they have in storage that gives him, like, strength.
Okay.
So, they're in the, like, in the Edda, which is one of the, like, classic Norse poems, it mentions that Thor has these, like, magic items, and one of them is his belt, and it doubles the strength of Thor. And so if you watch the first Thor movie, like, his costume falls off, and he, like, Odin rips the circles off. Okay. I always thought that was what they were. They were his belt, basically, that made him stronger, right? And then, like, even in the movie, he gets hit by a car and then tased. I was rewatching Thor recently while I painted, so, right? Like, he's way weaker without his costume, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I think that's supposed to be, you know, like, his strength belt.
Yeah, that isn't how I would have interpreted that or guessed, but that's interesting.
Yeah, in this, but it's like, yeah, they're attached to his tunic. Yes. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can go ahead and leave that there. When we continue, we can pick up and discuss things like how Thor mistreated Iron Man.
Excuse me?
Yeah, that can be
Jay, come on.
A topic of discussion.
Oh my gosh. I don't see how that's up for discussion.
Okay, well, you'll find out. So, okay.
Oh, Jesus.
Before we head out, let's say what our next arc is going to be.
Yes.
Or what we're going to continue.
So, we're going to do Loki, and I really want us to continue this story arc and read more about how Loki, how this version of Loki is, like, such a cool character. So we're going to continue reading the 2007 Thor, and we're going to read issues 6 through 12.
Okay. So, real quick here at the end, I wanted to give a thank you to everyone who has been supporting us on Patreon and listening to the podcast. I know that podcasts in general, one of the things that podcasts have been experiencing is a decrease in listenership, a decrease in subscribers, stuff like that, because, you know, people aren't driving to work, or they're not doing this or that, and those people who have, or money's tight right now, and, like, I get it, I understand, and so, you know, that's something that we've been experiencing as well with our Patreon, but I wanted to say thank you to the people who have been listening, and to the people who've been able to continue their support of us on Patreon. We appreciate it very much, and you guys are awesome. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody.